who's the customer for NIL ultimately? It's probably going to be the athlete, because they're trying that what they're the problem they're trying to solve is, how do I monetize my brand? Okay, so what I might do, depending on what, if I had a product that was relevant to them, I would think about what free advice can I give them that would help them do that. All right, welcome back, Dr. Dinan. So good to see your face after this holiday. And we are now into our, what is it, seventh episode of ThoughtWave here, where we discuss tips, tricks, and hacks for audience builders, entrepreneurs.
I missed you too. I'm sorry. I was a little slow on the uptake. Sorry, I missed you. I missed that intro. I missed it. We took off last week because of the holiday. And sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Is this becoming a thing? Yeah. This is becoming
stop interrupting me, interrupting you. I was busy interrupting you.
Fair.
Sorry. Get your intro. Okay, finish.
Fine. Here we go. Well, welcome to ThoughtWave, where we discuss tips, tricks, and hacks for audience builders, entrepreneurs, and people who just want to do things. So what kind of things are we going to be doing this week, Dr. Dinan?
What things we're doing? I have a policy now, and it's I take the week of Thanksgiving off. And because entrepreneurs, one thing entrepreneurs are really bad at, I think, is giving themselves time off, because, you know, they get so invested in their work and their stuff. And you know, I find the best way for me to take my time off, it's really cheesy, but I found that, like, I just go on a cruise with my family. Because if I put myself on a boat in the middle of the ocean with crappy Wi-Fi, kind of have to take time off. So, but what happens though is, and the reason I think this reset is so important is because it lets your brain kind of think and wander in weird directions. And so you get to think a lot about your company, even though you can't, like, do your entrepreneurial things. And if you've never been on a cruise, have you been on a cruise, Chris?
I have been on a bunch of cruises, actually. My grandparents used to take the whole family on cruises all over the place. So I know exactly what you're talking about. And they are, I know sometimes they get a lot of heat, but I like them. I have a great time on them.
They are money sucking machine. I mean, like, they are optimized to, like, they are entrepreneurial brilliance, right? Like, it's, hey, let's stick a bunch of people onto a boat in the middle of the ocean where they have, like, no other choice when they need stuff. So I ran out of toothpaste. So of course I had to get toothpaste, and you're the only place selling toothpaste. It was a bit of a monopoly. And so I way overpaid for that toothpaste, but I had to get that toothpaste, right? So I'm always fascinated. One of the reasons I love cruises is because everywhere I look, I feel like I just see just a brilliant optimization. And so one example of this that's really been sticking in my head, I can't get out of my head. I just read an article about this on Medium, but it's as we're getting off the ship. So we went in and out of New Orleans, and I love New Orleans. It's one of my favorite cities. And so we booked ourselves a late flight on Saturday when we got in so that we could spend the day exploring New Orleans. My kids had never been there, and not really a great place to take your kids, but that's a different podcast. So we had, like, a whole day exploring New Orleans, except we had this issue of, like, we had all these bags, and we were traveling with another family, some family friends, and they had a lot of bags too. And we had, before we got on the ship, I think we had arranged with the hotel we stayed up the night before to, like, let us at least put our bags there, but we're gonna have to get our bags all the way to that hotel. And then of course we'd go out and explore, but then we'd have to go back to the hotel to get the bags, to get into the airport or whatever it was. And it was gonna be a hassle. And as we're walking off in the cruise terminal, there's this, woman standing there with a sign that's basically saying, need help getting your bags to the airport while you wander around the city? And immediately I see that sign, I go, yes. Yeah, at that point, I didn't care how much it cost. I'm like, yes, that's exactly the problem I need solved. And it was kind of pricey, for what it was, but it didn't matter. I just paid it. And then I got to go explore New Orleans without any hassle. And then, 8 hours later, I got to the airport, and, sure enough, my bags were right there and I didn't have to think about them. And it got me thinking, oh my gosh, this is entrepreneurship in its purest form. This woman, or the company she's working for, I don't know if it was her company or she's just working for it, but just figured out, hey, there's going to be all these people with this problem, and I'm just going to insert myself right there where they have the problem, and it's going to make the sale so easy. And I think this is something entrepreneurs struggle with so much, is they have so much trouble getting customers because they have this brilliant idea, but they don't really know how to reach that customer at that perfect moment. So I thought I wanted to hear your thoughts on this, because you are so great at sales and so brilliant at this. How do you think about reaching customers at the perfect moment?
Great question. So, when I'm thinking, when I'm helping my clients figure out, how do I get in front of my customers at the right time? Generally speaking, what I'm thinking about is, what is the most efficient way to get access to a group of those customers at once? Because usually my team, they're founders, they're CEOs, they have limited sales resources. And so they're always trying to figure out, how can I do this? And in the most efficient way. So when I'm thinking about the most efficient way to do it, I'm thinking about what types of companies or events have an audience of my potential customers already. And so a really obvious one is conferences, right? You know, if you have industry conferences, those types of things, generally speaking, people will go to those conferences in order to, you know, learn about new things in their industry. And there's usually two types of conferences. There's like the educational conferences, and then there are the buying conferences. And buying conferences are typically ones where you've got a bunch of vendors and people are trying to figure out how they're going to spend their budgets for the upcoming year. Usually those conferences are between, you know, now or in December, and the past 6 months is when those conferences tend to happen. So like that's one really obvious idea. The other thing, I was consulting for a company not too long ago that had they facilitate a marketplace where they're trying to match elders who need at-home care with students who are generally, you know, pre-med, you know, pre-nursing, things like that. So they're trying to connect college students with elderly who need support during the day. So they're not going to be providing medical care necessarily, but just companionship care. And one of the things that they figured out was that a lot of their customers were seeking for help on another website. You know, in this case, it was something like care.com or something like that. And so what they did is they made sure that they had a level of presence on this platform where they already had a bunch of customers who were in the moment seeking that help, seeking that resource. And then another thing that they did is they realized that a lot of these folks who were caring for their elderly parents or who were providing that companionship care, that were the ones actually hiring this out, right? Because it's not necessarily, hey, I'm an older person at home who needs help. Let me call somebody to hang out with me. Generally speaking, it's that person's family, right? And so they figured, like, where are these people hanging out? And what they would do is they would put flyers up in coffee shops and different places where they know that family members might be going to help, you know, or going about their day. And so that was another place where they just got their coffee, they're looking at the tack board with all the papers and flyers on there, and then all of the sudden they're like, oh wait, this is exactly what I need because I'm getting ready to go there right now, or I just came from there. So I think generally speaking, that's what I think about when I'm helping entrepreneurs start to think, where are these critical masses of their customers when they're most, you know, thinking about mostly about the problem that they're having? And then, you know, we'll explore what's the best way to, you know, what advertise in those places or to actually sell in those places.
Yeah, I think this is a big part of why people struggle to get customers is because they don't do this step. You know, they focus on the, I'm going to build X. Look at my cool app. Look at my cool technology. Instead of saying, where is it going to be easy to get in front of a person who has this problem? And that should be like 100% of your brain power. This is why a platform like Google Ads is so powerful. And this is why Google was able to take over the world. And, you know, what they did is, you know, functionally the search box is that moment of choice. If I'm searching for best pizza in Durham, it means I'm at this moment of changing my habit, right? I'm basically raising my hand and saying, I might normally eat pizza here, but now I'm looking for another place to eat pizza. And so I'm willing to change my habit. And getting people to change their habits is, I always tell my students, is the hardest part of entrepreneurship. It's not coming with a brilliant idea. It's not building it. It's not hiring and managing. I mean, those things all have their challenges. The hard part about entrepreneurship is getting people to move away from what they're already doing. And Google is the moment they're changing.
Yeah, you know, that's interesting because it's what's making me think about is, you know, when we were in the real estate technology space, I learned a lot about, you know, home buyers and home sellers and the advertising space around there. And one of the things that was fascinating to me, do you know what customers or what advertisers do you think would want to know if somebody just bought a new home or is about ready to buy a new home? Any ideas?
I mean, I wonder if it's like a Home Depot or like any sort of home repair improvement.
Bingo. That's exactly right. Because right then, there's a lot of stuff that are getting ready to go on with the home. They're getting ready to move in. They're probably going to need new shelves. They're going to need plants and pots and all kinds of stuff, right? And so What they do is they will, there are data brokers out there who will sell Home Depot, Lowe's, et cetera, all of these contacts of people who are getting ready to move or who have just moved, so that those companies in turn can send them advertisements to get them into their stores and drive awareness around where those stores are located. And so you're bringing up a cool point in that, and in thinking like, hey, are there critical moments where people might want to use your product? So like big life changes, you know, I know insurance companies really want to know when somebody's getting married, for instance, because that's a big life change and there are different insurance needs that come up at that point. Same thing with what we talked about with home buying, same thing with kids, right? So when you get ready to start a new family, like though that's a huge life change as well. So how can you as a business owner start to identify what those big moments of change, whether they're in businesses or in their personal lives, so that you can say, okay, now that I know those changes, where can I find a list of those people, or where do those people actually hang out?
You know, I call these transition moments, and you know, kind of the why now moment. What's causing people to change their habits, change their behaviors? I actually have this in a shameless plug, but I have this in a course. It's a free course on my website. It's I think it's How to Tell If Your Startup Idea Is Any Good. I think that's the name of the course.
Well, will my business idea work? Is what
will my business idea? You know, my course is better than I do. Will my business idea work? And in it, there's this fundamental principle of it's okay. What? So now we're saying you got to look for these transition moments. When do these transition moments happen? Well, in my experience, there's kind of four types of reasons for a transition moment. So the first one is a technological shift. And so the example I always like to use there is Uber, right? So, you know, if you popped in a time machine, let's just hop in our handy dandy time machine here, and went back 70 years and you said, hey, how would you like to be able to just pull a button out of your pocket, press it, a car picks you up where you are and takes you wherever you want to go? Do you think people would be like, oh, that's terrible, I don't want that? No, it would have sounded like an amazing idea. We just didn't have the technology to do it. So, you know, once this new technology comes along, we all have phones and we have GPS and like that can happen. Well, then this technology makes sense. So people are willing to change their behaviors to adapt to this new technology they have. So that's one opportunity to find a transition moment, is how new technologies are changing the world. Right now, I would say, you know, AI, right? Like, so AI is changing how people act and behave. So that's, you know, that's worth thinking about. Or even, you know, a new administration is coming in, right? That's going to change. Where anytime there's a big change, I guess that's not that would go into the next one. So anytime there's a big technology change, the next one would be a social change. So anytime there's a technology change and then kind of a behavioral change, a social cultural change. So a cultural shift is, the example I always like to use on this one is Airbnb. If you had gone back, you know, 20, 25 years ago, I think all the technology for Airbnb existed. People were on the internet and the web. We could post pictures. We could go buy things on the internet, but you wouldn't do it because the idea of renting a room in someone's house to sleep in would sound like from the internet, that would sound like more the start of a horror movie than something that would be a multi-billion-dollar business, right? Because the culture wasn't there yet. We didn't trust people on the internet in the way, we didn't have the mechanisms of trust. So when there's a big cultural shift, that's when people's behaviors start to change and you can go in there and you can find your customer. And then the third one is kind of the most simplistic one. I call it a resources shift. So, you know, I think the buying a new house is a great example, right? It's like, I have this kind of new need. I have this house, I have this different resource and I need to deal with that resource. Or another simple example is I just have a big pot of money, right? Let's say, you know, your rich uncle dies and suddenly you have, you know, $20 million. Well, now you've got more money and you can spend it on more things. And if you can find that person that just got $20 million, right, they're going to be willing to spend. You know, if you're selling B2B stuff, right? Like you want to look for a company that just got a new round of funding, because that new round of funding, you know, maybe you're selling office furniture. Well, that new round of funding is they're going to hire more people. They're going to need new desks and chairs and stuff like that, right? So a resource shift is going to be it. And then the fourth one, which I think is, it's kind of the easiest to spot, but the hardest to really take advantage of in a lot of ways, is let's call it a regulatory shift, right? So new laws, new services. A great example of that is, because I'm in the college landscape, the NCAA suddenly allows players to monetize on NIL, name, image, and likeness, which is a huge shift for however long the NCAA existed. That's never been possible. Suddenly it's possible that regulation changes. What it does is it creates all these new companies coming out of the woodwork. because now you got, you know, 5,000 colleges and universities, I guess not all 5,000 play sports, but let's say, you know, 500 to 1,000 of them are playing sports, suddenly need things related to name, image, likeness. And so it creates this demand, this need in the market. Now, the reason I say it's one of the hardest ones to tackle is because it's really easy to see. And so just being at Duke and being familiar with like the athletics program here and some people in there, right? They get so many emails a day from new startups trying to sell them something because everyone realizes that this is coming along. So it's really hard to break through all that noise, but of course it is ripe for the picking.
Okay, so this is, I like to make things tactical here. And I think you brought up a bunch of really good examples. And to help people listening along, myself, my clients as well, you know, let's look at the example first of Uber, and then let's talk about like the NIL example, because I think that's a great example, because there's a lot of innovation going on in that space right now. So if you were to go back then and think, if you were launching, like if Uber didn't exist today, and you were going to launch an Uber today, like what types of, what would you do in order to start publicizing Uber and your this new app that you have that puts drivers and riders together? What would you do?
Is it weird? My first thought was, where do people need taxis? So I guess
that's what I was thinking, like 2 a.m. on, you know, 2 a.m. at the bar strip in your town.
Yep. And you're walking around and you're like, yo, you struggling to get a cab? Hey, there's this app, just add it to your phone, and the person's probably a little tipsy and like, oh yeah, sure, that sounds like a great idea. And then the car picks them up and they take them, and now you've got a customer.
Right. Yeah, I love that. What about like maybe, you know, conferences? Like, and I specifically mean a lot of people come out of the conference for the day. They're looking for cabs because they got to get back sometimes to their hotel or go out to dinner or whatever. I might do the same thing there and like hang out outside of these, like, you know, what's the big one? The Mahoney Center in San Francisco, or is that New York?
Sorry, yeah.
San Francisco.
You're right. I think New York is the, I can see both in my head.
Yeah. I've been so many times there, right? Or in Vegas, for instance. You go to Vegas and you hang out outside of those places, so that, because everybody's hopping between hotels.
The Javits. That's the one. That's a great point. You know, I also think sporting events, 30,000 people are getting out of the stadium. Everyone's, you know, trying to get a cab. Be there, right? So that's a great, I love the tacticalness of that. It's, you know, saying, okay, where are people having this problem? It's the same as when I was getting off that dang cruise ship. Where is the moment people are having this problem? Let me go there, because that's when people are going to be receptive to buy. It just is.
You know what this is reminding me of? So a long time ago, you remember Constant Contact? They're kind of like an email marketing platform, like MailChimp or whatever. Their CEO was Gail Goodman, and she did this awesome talk on YouTube that was called like the slow SaaS ramp of death. But one of the things that I loved about her customer acquisition strategy after she plateaued is they started putting marketing experts in each major city where there were concentrations of companies that were interested, that she knew would be interested in email marketing and in customer acquisition. Think Chicago, think New York, think DC, Atlanta, etc. And she put these marketing experts there, went on Meetup, put email marketing meetups on the calendar there, advertised them through Meetup's website. And then what happened is a bunch of these marketing people who had jobs in the industry there would come to these meetups, and the meetup would be led by a representative from Constant Contact, and they'd go through all the marketing best practices on email marketing, how to write good email cadences, how to write good subject lines, things like that. And of course, when they were going through and showing how to do that, they were showing how to do it in Constant Contact's platform. So all of these marketers saw, oh, I know how to do this best practice now in this platform. And that's what that helped them scale into their next era of growth, was by building these little communities across the country.
That's brilliant. I wish I was that smart. It reminds me, I think a story I think I might've told on this podcast before, but I'll just reference it again, is when I had a little email plugin that we used with my last company, my last venture company. And it was, the question, one of the things that happened to solve is how to know when people opened your email. And so we went to Quora and, you know, we looked for anyone asking, how do I know if someone read my email? And we made sure that our product was kind of listed as one of the ways you could do it there. And anytime that question existed. So again, it was just, if people are actively asking the question, if people are actively trying to solve the problem, that's what you do. I mean, this is honestly, you're driving down the highway and those blue signs that show you the gas stations, right? Like, that's what they're doing, right? Like, some portion of those people driving down that highway are going to need gas. And so that sign is basically saying, hey, there's a gas station here. And if you need gas, you got to stop. You don't have a choice.
Yes. Yeah. So this is important to highlight for our audience, because we're talking about two different things, really, if we're thinking about it. One, we're talking about like finding passive audiences, your folks coming out of a sports game or out of a conference or out of a bar, right? That's kind of passive. They're coming out, you're acquiring. Then there's this active idea. And the active idea is what Gail Goodman was talking about in that YouTube, where she's talking about going out and creating community, creating gravity or a magnet for the people that she wanted to ultimately sell to, right? So there's active and passive group finding here.
I love that idea of how would you create? I guess it would be totally product dependent. How would you create a community for? I mean, that seems so much harder in my head than maybe.
Well, let's talk about it with the NIL, for instance.
All right.
Okay. Yeah. So NIL, who's the customer for NIL ultimately? It's probably going to be the athlete. Because the problem they're trying to solve is, how do I monetize my brand? Okay. So what I might do, depending on what, if I had a product that was relevant to them, I would think about what free advice can I give them that would help them do that. So, you know, brand, I know you teach, Dr. Dinnan, you teach in a course on building brand in order to publicize yourself on social media. So I might start there. I might go to each college campus and say, hey, I'm going to have these free classes, these free meetups, et cetera, where we talk about how to cultivate a personal brand. And then let's say, you know, we have a social media cohort that we, you know, you and I do through Audience Acceleration Labs. If we were going to sell that, our product, our, you know, Audience Acceleration Labs cohort, I would probably say, hey, and then if you want to actually get in and amplify that brand, here's how you can work with us in order to do that further. So like, I'm generating this audience of people that are in my cohort for something that really matters to them. And then I'm taking what I have and I'm figuring out how to weave that into the conversation. I think that's one direction that I would potentially take.
The thing that makes sense is, I guess you're allowing self-selection, like the constant contact person. By doing that, right, people are showing up to that, or basically people are hand raisers saying, I have this problem. So I guess the fundamental principle here is, can you create a community of hand raisers? I guess that's what content marketing does, right? Is it almost creates a community of hand raisers. So, yeah, so in a way, I mean, I say we're not necessarily talking about anything revolutionary here, in the sense that what we're talking about is inbound versus outbound marketing. But I think what's different, or I think it's the more important thing here, is the different framing, which is, what you want to do is you want to find the people who have the problem. And I know, because I've done it, I've seen lots of entrepreneurs do it, is they waste their time doing a lot of marketing without being tactical and surgical about, like, hey, make sure I'm marketing to people who have the problem.
Because
that's going to dramatically increase success rates. So, you know, I think the big problem, you know, why so many people are struggling to get customers is, you know, they know they need to market, but they're not tactical about how they're marketing. They're not finding the people with the problem. So it's all about find people with the problem.
That's right. And so what's important here is, everybody that we are talking to, our listeners here, theoretically, they're founders, they're CEOs, they're executives in positions where they're trying to figure out how to be more efficient with their time. And what we're talking about is, be more efficient with your time by finding out, what are those one-to-many options that I have in order to build an audience that I can ultimately sell to? And who has the keys to those kingdoms? Because I'm willing to bet, let's use the NIL as an example, if I want to get to those college students, it's not going to be very easy going one-to-one to get to those college students. So what I might have to do is, I might have to find an ambassador on that campus that knows the campus, that's already friends with those people that I'm trying to get access to, and go that direction. Or maybe I need to build a relationship with a coach who is motivated to get those players together in order to train them on NIL because they know it'll make it easier for recruiting. So I'm trying to figure out, where is that kernel of value for the person who has the keys to the kingdom, so that I can orchestrate my approach or my pitch to that person's desires and needs in order to acquire that group or that audience that we're talking about, in this case, an audience of athletes in college.
A fun thought wave while you were talking. as the example, I want to put this idea into practice, Chris. I was reading this article, a random article about, it's the holiday season, and I guess there's a huge increase in, are you familiar with the concept of porch pirates?
Yes. Yes. So the bane of our existence. I hate that is a thing that exists.
I'm trying to think, knock wood. I don't think I've had to deal with porch piracy yet, but according to this article, 50% of all shoppers this holiday season will have to deal with porch piracy. So, okay. So that's, you know, to me, this is a funny example of, okay, so this kind of fits everything we're talking about here. So, right, this is a new problem that's emerged because of technology. Right. Like, you know, 30 years ago, this wouldn't have been a problem. And so now we've got this new habit and, you know, this dramatic increase of online shopping and people having things showing up at the door. And so that's created this whole, let's call it, industry of porch pirates. All right. So if I wanted to sell a product to stop porch pirates, I don't even care what the product is. How do I reach the people? I'm going to put you on the spot. What would be a creative way to reach the problem of someone who's struggling with porch pirates?
Here's one idea that I have. So I might give flyers, or I might strike a partnership with FedEx and UPS delivery people, so, and give them like a stack of cards so that they could drop it off with a package that they are delivering, to see how effective that would be. And if that worked, then I might scale that to, you know, the actual company that they're delivering for and try to strike up a corporate thing. But I think from a guerrilla marketing perspective, I might go that direction. So that's one. Second is, do you know where the most neighborhood vitriol and, frankly, BS there, you know, what platform has the most of that?
As a homeowner, I have to imagine there's an app called Nextdoor.
Absolutely. Nextdoor. Right. It's just people complaining about, like, loud kids, people driving fast. I saw a sketchy person walking through my neighborhood. I would 100% get on that platform and start yelling about how somebody stole my package, and I would say, and I found this solution and here it is. And I would do that. And I would probably get a bunch of other people. I would look for other people who are complaining on that platform about it. And I would respond to their posts with my solution.
You know, that I was telling, I have a buddy, a neighbor who does stump grinding, which is, you know, this kind of weird, like, I'm just going to go and, like, remove these stumps from your yard, which is something you don't think about, but of course needs to happen. And I was trying to advise him on how to get more customers because he just moved to the area. And I said, what you should do is you got to go onto these, you know, mom Facebook groups, which there, you know, every area has, like, these mom Facebook groups. And you just need to wait for someone to say something about, oh, I got this awful stump. And then you just jump in and be like, oh, I know a guy who does great stump grinding work. And that is your, you know, that's your tactic. There's so much value, I think enormous value, for at least for the kind of local services, on mom Facebook groups, because everyone needs a freaking handyman. Everyone needs some sort of yard service. And there's always the question, like, does anyone know X? And so you can kind of get your business off the ground. Again, this isn't your scalable, let's turn this into the $1 billion version. But if we want to get that kind of initial traction, I would just say, you know, go to Nextdoor. Go to Facebook groups, like, get in there and look for people with the problem you're having. If you've got the services type of company, local services, and you will have a good business. And this is what so many entrepreneurs, I think they get wrong, is they see, and again, this goes back to that Dan Cruise turnicle. So here, let's put it aside, a nice bow, go for a circle. And so the thing that I loved about that Dan Cruise terminal is, like, that's entrepreneurship, right? We always think, like, oh, I got to build this world-changing, revolutionary app, you know, that's AI, it's going to be this billion-dollar company. I bet the person who owns that dang luggage service, you know, it's called lifestyle business, and it's got such a pejorative term. I bet that person is making, you know, clearing $500,000 a year, and just by delivering bags to the airport with a truck, right? And so, like, that is a great opportunity. And I think there's a gajillion of those if you're willing to, and go to Nextdoor, go to Facebook, find the groups, and provide a service that people need when they're waving their hand and they say they need it.
Here's the thing that I would caution people listening to this about and saying to themselves, this feels like a lot of work. Because if I was a founder and a CEO and I was listening to this, I'd be like, oh man, like to go and find all these Facebook groups and all of this kind of stuff and like post in there and whatever, it sounds really hard, right? And I would say this, if you really sit down and you think about it, it would probably take you about 30 minutes to build a list of, I don't know, 100 of these different Facebook groups just by doing a search. And you could build that list, and then it'd probably take you maybe another hour to go through, copy and paste and post response or apply to join the groups or whatever you have to do in order to get in. And then maybe do that once a week. And can you imagine if you did that, you know, 50 times a year, once a week, you spend maybe 2 hours doing this and you build an audience incrementally over time, like that could change the game and arguably would be one of the most valuable ways that you could spend your time as a CEO or founder, because you're building these one-to-many groups. And if you do it in an authentic way, you won't get kicked out of the groups because you can't be spammy or whatever. And if you, the founder and CEO, are doing that on your own, then you can train somebody else to do it really well for you later. So I do think it's important as a CEO, as a founder, as an executive, to try and do these things so that you learn along the way, unless you're hiring somebody internally to your company that already has experience doing it.
It is a lot of work. This is the fundamental problem I see with so many of the entrepreneurs, young entrepreneurs I work with, is they want to build the cool thing. They want to fundraise. They want to go raise all the money. They want to do like the sexy things. But like you said, committing couple hours a week, I mean, it's not even that much. It's what it is, I would call it, is boring work. It's dull work. It's not sexy work. But committing, let's call it, you know, 10 hours a week for 50 weeks is going to give you $250,000 a year salary. Like, wouldn't that sound awesome if I told you that? It's just people don't want to do that grind. It's the same thing with social media content production. And so many of my clients, that, you know, the thing they never like to hear is that every day I sit down and grind out to make sure I put out a video. It does take me a few hours a day every day, but the result is I've gone from, you know, like 10,000 followers to over 200,000 on Instagram in a year, because every day I do that grind. And so if you want value, there is no magic solution, and no one likes to hear that. But this is the core of what I always swear to in all my content, in the kind of entrepreneurship educator I want to be. I don't sell magic beans. There is no such thing as magic in entrepreneurship and startups. You want to be successful, you got to put in the work. And usually the work is not sexy work.
No, sorry. And there's so much learning that's driven from doing what you're doing. When you're posting every day, you're figuring out what people respond to, what people don't respond to. And then you can actually look at the data and take that data and come up with a plan that's going to make you even more efficient. Because I've heard you say numerous times that social media growth, it's not linear, it's exponential. And part of the reason that it's exponential is in the early days, you're putting in a bunch of content that's not really hitting. Some is hitting. So it like looks like there's slow growth, but then you start finding the things that hit more, you invest in those. So now your average that you're growing on a week to week basis goes up, and then you're finding more that do that. And then you're increasing that average each time you find another strategy that works. So as a founder, as an entrepreneur, you can do the same thing when you're testing these user acquisition strategies, because really at the end of the day, you as the founder, you as the CEO, you are either the product expert or you're the customer acquisition expert or both. And if that's the case, you've got to be leading the charge on the strategy so that you can figure out what works and package that off and give it to somebody else to scale and run ultimately down the line.
This has become my new pet peeve, is I've got, because I work with so many students on their social media stuff, but it translates to any type of venture you're building, is they come to me and they haven't been posting at all. And what they want to talk about with me is what's their optimal posting strategy. And yeah, I say, well, you know, how much content you post? Well, I haven't started posting yet. I say, well, okay, go back and put up a post every day for the next 3 months and then come talk to me and we'll figure out what's working. Because how? Because we can't know these things, right? You just can't know them. The audience is going to tell you. The data is going to tell you. You know, what's it? You know, how do I find my customer? Who's the best customer? It's like, well, go try to find customers in different ways and let's learn. Let the data tell you. But you got to do the work.
You as the creator, actually, you're the talent. People forget that. When you're the creator, you are the talent. Because remember, we were talking to a potential customer the other day that was outsourcing their content creation to another company and was, you know, thinking it through, like, why isn't this working? Why am I not getting the traction that I want? And the reason is because when you're the talent, when you're the creator, it's up to you to be creative. You're the magnet. You're the one who's coming up with the cool ideas. And we can't forget that. As founders, leaders, as creators, it is up to us to lead that charge and to innovate and to figure out what's going to work. I can't come to Dr. Dinan and be like, tell me what's going to work for me. Because I'm not an expert on, you're not an expert on me. You're not going to be able to figure that out. So you've got to leave it in my hands. You can give me the best practices. You can tell me like, hey, you need to tell a better story here. Your lighting's off or the way that you're filming this or your cuts or whatever, they're not working. Same thing in the sales process, right? Like if you're not executing on the sales process, I can't tell you how to sell your thing, but I can tell you what the best practices are that are going to lead to the most success. But you've got to put the content in. You've got to put the practice in to figure that out. And then people like you and I can really help scale that and make that into a big thing.
You got to do the work. And that's what we're doing here with this podcast. It's funny. You see all these big successful podcasts and you forget that, you know, they're on episode number 782, which means they had 781 that came before it. And if you had listened to their seventh episode, it wasn't there yet, I bet. And you know, we're probably not there yet, but we're going to be because we're doing the work.
We're doing the work. And what was cool is we ran into a listener, shout out to Amy if she's listening to this one, and she gave us great feedback on like audio levels and things like that. So audience, if you're listening to this and there you see ways to improve or you want us to dig deeper into certain topics, please reach out to us. Go to audienceaccelerationlabs.com. There's contact form there. Go to aarondinan.com and reach out there. We'll get it. We'll see it. Give us the feedback. Tell us what you want to hear more of. Tell us what you want to hear less of. If we're goofing something up, we'll fix that too. Right, Aaron?
Not an if. Just tell us what we're goofing up. It's guaranteed. It's happening. Guaranteed. So please let us know.
Please let us know. And with that, let's wrap up this episode of Thought Wave, where we discuss tips, tricks, and hacks for audience builders, entrepreneurs, and people who just want to do things. Thank you so much for listening today. Please like, subscribe, download, share with your friends, put it up on in your meetings, roll it up a flagpole. I don't care. Just get the word out. We appreciate it. Thank you so much. And until next time.